So if we've not met before, my name's Mike Talty. I work for Microsoft in the UK. And as I've said at all my sessions here, so I'll say it again at the risk of repeating myself, I have all of my contact details on the slide. So you can mail me, you can find my website, or you can tweet at me with the details that you see on the slide here. We've got just a bit more than an hour to take a tour of the Managed Extensibility Framework in Silverlight 4, or MEF to its friends. MEF is kind of how I'll refer to it throughout the talk. I'm not really assuming that you've seen this before here, so if you haven't seen it, then that's great. If you are a MEF expert, I doubt that I will teach you anything this afternoon, but I can try. But if you're new to this, then that's not too bad. Just out of interest, how many people have already written some code with MEF? So a few, but not even a fifth or something like that. So that sounds about right to me. And I am focusing on this from a Silverlight 4 perspective, as we'll talk as we go along. So let's take a look at what we're going to talk about. MEF, as we've said already, is the Managed Extensibility Framework. I've just got a few more folks drifting in. And essentially, I put my own definition on that. So this is not some official Microsoft definition. This is just Mike's definition of what I think the Managed Extensibility Framework is. And I probably described it on the slide as something along the lines of an extensible framework for composing applications out of a set of pieces or parts that are brought together at runtime by MEF through discovery, and also that having discovered a set of component parts and bolted them together to form them into running code, MEF also supports the idea that that composition can change over time. So the idea that you might have to recompose these pieces back together again to put them back together at a later point in time. MEF is shipping in three different forms. There's three different bunches of MEF code around. And so the one I'm really talking about here is the version of MEF that is in Silverlight 4, which is, as you probably know, in release candidate right now. And I think we said we'll launch the Dev Connections show in the States 12th to 14th of April. So we're not far away from the final release of Silverlight. And MEF is part of that framework. There is also another version of MEF. You will find another version of MEF in the full .NET framework for the desktop and for the server. And you will also find a version of MEF on Codeplex as well. If you go to mef.codeplex.com, you'll find a version of MEF with source code that you can compile. And just as a sort of handy tip, I found that version of MEF very useful because it's got full source code and you can step through it and see what it's doing. So if you take a real interest in MEF, then the source code up there can be a really valuable learning resource. So three different versions of MEF. We're going to talk about the one that's in Silverlight 4. And I'm going to try and use a sort of really basic scenario as we go through things here. I wrote this talk when I was playing with iTunes in my house. And I don't know if you know, you go into iTunes or a media player like that, and you right mouse on an album and you ask it to go off to the cloud and get the information, the metadata for that particular album. I was doing a lot of that on the day that I wrote this talk, and that's why this scenario is really based around that. So imagine you're the developer writing that functionality. You're writing media player or iTunes or something along those lines. And you're implementing the right mouse functionality, which goes off and gets the album information from whatever provider we get it from. So I've just kind of decomposed that down into three little components. The media player, which is the thing invoking the functionality. The album information provider, which gets you the track names and the artist name and all that stuff. And the album art provider, which is the thing that just gets you the photograph of the album cover. Make sense? Simple enough? Okay, so we're going to follow these through most of this talk, really. I'll play around with this stuff. It might be that you do something like this. So it might be that, in my case, I want to make it such that these components are as decoupled as possible. So I just implement them by implementing interfaces. And so all the media player knows about is the iAlbum Info Provider interface. And all the Album Info Provider knows about is the iAlbum Art Provider interface. I've just factored them out into interfaces. And the way I've got the code on the screen right at the moment, the top component here explicitly constructs the next component down and uses it, and the next component explicitly constructs the next component down and uses it. And maybe we call some methods like this. We call this component to say, get me the album info, and that component calls this other component, says, get me the artwork. Okay, so it couldn't be much simpler, really. Notice that as we're putting these things together, we have built dependencies here that make this code perhaps less maintainable and less testable than it needs to be. So, for instance, our media player explicitly constructs, in the diagram I've got right here, an instance of the album info provider. That makes it difficult to test that, unit test that thing, without having one of those album info providers created by that component. And similarly, our album info provider on the diagram constructs an album art provider. And again, if we wanted to unit test that layer in isolation, we might not want that component to explicitly construct things, because if it explicitly constructs it, how do we mock that thing that it's explicitly constructing from a unit testing perspective? But this is how I've drawn this for now. Let's go and take a look at using MEF in that basic scenario. And I'll try and walk through this fairly slowly and just show you what we're doing. So probably the first thing to do is just press F5. And let's spin up Visual Studio. And this is a sort of little sample I've already got. And it's meant to illustrate the stuff we were just talking about on the screen. I've built that code. It only knows how to search for one album and bring back one picture. That's the whole sample. We can search, and we bring back one picture. It's not even a very good picture. Okay, but we get the album information, and we get the picture. Let me show you how I've done that with MEF. So what I've got is, as you would expect in Silverlight, just a main XAML page, which is largely just data bound. So you'll see it's binding to some search text, and you'll see that it's binding and picking up a button handler, sorry, for when I click the button. And it binds to some album metadata, picking up the image and the title and the artist when that stuff is returned. Very simple. This project is using MEF, which means it brings in system.componentModel.composition, system.componentModel.composition.initialization. These are long names. But it's bringing in those two things. And what we do behind here, if we take a look at the code, is here's my main page, my code behind. And you'll notice that my code behind uses one of those album info providers that I talked about, and we use the interface here. And if I just show you the definition of that interface, it's really quite trivial. Get me the album information, and it just returns a little set of information. If I show you that information for a second, it's just a title, an artist, and an image. That's all that's coming back. So we got this little interface that gets me the album information. And what my main page is saying is it never constructs one of those itself. It simply goes and uses the component here when we click the search button. It never, ever constructs that component. What it says is, to MEF, I import one of these interfaces. I import one of these interfaces. I need one of these interfaces. The only other thing we say is at initialization time on this component, we walk up to MEF, and this is the only function call to MEF in this sample, satisfy the imports on this particular object. And MEF will say, okay, I see that you have an import here for an iAlbum info provider. And in this particular case, I have an implementation of that class over here, album info provider, and here it is. And effectively, MEF will create one of those things and plug it into the other component. And as it's creating that, because it says it exports an iAlbum info provider, that's why it'll create it and plug it in. As it's creating this, you'll notice that this component has an album art provider, which it imports as an iAlbum art provider. And when we actually call the method here, what it does is it just always sets the same artist and the same title, but it asks the album art provider to provide the artwork for that particular album. But the way these things are wired together is that this just says, I import one of these things, and over here we have the album art provider that says, well, I happen to export one of those things, so that's cool. And it knows how to get the album art. And that's how that stuff all hangs together. So when we're pressing F5, essentially we aren't creating any of these, we're only creating the top level component. We create the main page, and then we say to MEF, satisfy the imports on this particular object. It'll find this one. It'll go and find the export that matches. It'll plug it in. As it recursively walks to that export that matches, it will find that it also does an import, and it will plug that in as well. Does that kind of make sense? Okay, cool. Let me shut that guy down. So as we look at this, let's step back a bit and talk about how MEF sees the world. So let's just step back. MEF talks about composable parts. You can really think of them as components, but composable parts is the terminology that MEF uses. And MEF says that a composable part is a component that comes along and specifies, optionally, a set of exports and a set of imports. So maybe I'm a word processor and I import a spell checking engine. Maybe I am Excel and I import a calculation engine. Maybe I import a logging component or an error handling component or whatever it might be. But I'm a part and I have a bunch of imports and a bunch of exports. That's how I define myself to MEF. What we then do with those things is there is in MEF no kind of registration step. You do not have to be, as a component author, somebody who walks up to a framework and says, hey, I'd like to tell you about myself. I'd like to introduce myself to the framework. That's not the way it works in MEF. What we do with MEF is essentially we kind of throw all these things into a box that MEF calls its composition engine. So into that composition engine come these parts. And this is kind of how I visualize this in my head. You throw the parts into sort of the box that MEF has, the composition engine. MEF gives that thing a bit of a shake. And it composes for you. Let's say, for instance, we're trying to compose this orange component here. So we say, hey, we want one of these orange components. And MEF says, oh, okay, and this doesn't perfectly match the diagram, but MEF says, oh, okay, I see the orange component. Well, it needs one of these purple components, one of these blue components, and then the purple component, it needs a couple of those blue components. I will string all this together for you and give it back to you. And all you do is say, here's the components, compose, and MEF figures it out. The question comes as to how does MEF match one component's imports to another component's exports. So if you look at the screen, what we've got is an orange component on the screen that has, I've labeled them red. It's saying, hey, I've got a couple of exports. Maybe they are spell checkers. Maybe they're calculation engines, whatever they may be. And then we've got our little blue component at the bottom that says, I've just got one import. And MEF has to be able to look at those two things and say, well, how do I decide, is there a match between his import and her export? Do these things just match? And what it does is it uses a thing called a contract on both sides. So on the export side over there, the contract has a name. Now, usually in MEF, this will correspond to the type name of your type in .NET. It doesn't have to, but usually it will correspond to the type name of your type in .NET. So where we were exporting an iAlbum info provider, that would probably end up being the name. You also have this notion of whether you want to do a shared export or not. And this is really around object instantiation. Do I want to share the export in the sense of, should MEF create a new instance every time it finds an import of that export, or should it just create one instance and share it across all the imports? So it's kind of, do you want to be a sort of singleton or not? That makes sense? Okay. Sorry, I shouldn't really stand in front of your screen, should I? And the other side is just you can attribute the contract with any arbitrary metadata, so that's just pairs of string to object tags. So you can just add metadata to differentiate that export from any other export. You just add metadata to it. On the import side, we use the name again. We also use the cardinality. I am Excel, I import a calculation engine. I may not want to import seven calculation engines. So we have that cardinality. Were you expecting one of these things? One or more of these things? What were you expecting when you import the thing? We also have the notion of being shared again. You may have a component that provides an export that says, I want to be shared. I may be a component that says, I don't want to share my instance of you with anybody else. I want my own instance. So we have to be able to match up. You're trying to share, I'm trying not to share, therefore we don't match. We have the notion of recomposability. Having lined up an import and export at one point in time, can that change over time? And we'll talk about that as we go along. And finally, again, arbitrary sets of metadata again, just name value pairs. Let me go and show you some of the stuff that MEF can do around imports and exports. So let's go back over to a different sample, but it's very, very similar. Let me just show you what's going on in here. We've not really changed things dramatically. Let's go back to our main page. And just to show you in the first instance, our main page is now not importing by interface. It is importing purely by type. We can also import by type. So anything that was derived from album info provider could be imported here by this import. That's one thing that we're doing. If we go and take a look at our album info provider over here, let's just take a look at it. You'll see I've changed the way that it was using previously. It was importing the art provider as a property. But now what it's doing is importing it at construction time into its constructor. So there's no point in the lifetime of this particular object where it will not have an iAlbum art provider. Okay, so we can do stuff like importing a construction time like this. We can also go and import, say, at, let's go and import here, let's go and say public iAlbum art provider, into a field, for instance. And it's worth saying that if you want to import, your fields and properties do need to be public. The way that Reflection works in Silverlight, you have to have these things public. They can't be private. And so if we do an import like that onto this field, I could set a breakpoint here, for instance. Let's just set a breakpoint, and let's make sure that our field gets populated with an import. So let's just run down into the debugger. We click our search button, and you can see that our field has been populated with that import. As you already know, we can import onto a property. So we could say, let's say property, iAlbum art provider property, something like that. We could go rebuild, and we'll get an implementation slotted into that property as well. So let's go and press F5. Search. We got our field populated. We've got our property populated. It's worth saying over here. Actually, I'll go back to that in a second. Let me show you something else. The way we're working at the moment, it's possibly not obvious to you that if I did something like this, where I am importing a string, and yet no one in the application is exporting a string anywhere. And what does Meph do at that point where I say, well, I'm importing a string, and Meph will say, well, terribly sorry, there isn't anybody exporting a string, therefore you're not going to get that import matched. So it just simply doesn't exist. Or we might say, well, okay, you know, you don't need to be as strict about it as that. I could say, look, I want to import a string, but if you don't have one, that's okay. You know, if you don't have one, just leave me with null, that'll be fine. And we could run that through to our breakpoint, and we'd see that now we're trying to import that string, but the string isn't available, so we just end up with null. So you have this notion of optional imports. If the export isn't there for you, then you don't get the import. It's quite simple to understand. Let me get rid of that guy for a minute. What might not be obvious to you at the moment is that if we go and take a look at the art provider over here, let's just find that album art provider. The album art provider is exporting himself, but I also added a little bit more to the contract. He says he is non-shared. And so if we were to put a breakpoint here, let's just put a breakpoint in his constructor. Let's run this up. Notice that we get 1, 2, 3 instances of that class before we even tried to do anything with it. So we're kind of aggressively creating those things to match the imports. Now, that may or may not be what you want. We can affect its behavior, though. Let's go back over here. And maybe what we'll do is just go to our class that's doing the imports. And instead of importing this way, I'll tell you what we'll do. We'll knock one of these off anyway. Let's get rid of that one. So now we've got 2, 1, 2. And instead of this, let's use a new type from .NET Framework 4, also in Silverlight, which is a thing called lazy. So we'll just say lazy of iAlbum art provider. We build that. What that means is don't instantiate the thing until I ask for it. So don't go and instantiate the export until I come along and ask for it. So what we could do here down here is we could say if this.album, what's that property called? This.artProvider dot, is the value created yet or not? So we could check that, and we could say if it's not created, then let's get the value. Let's just say var value equals this.artProviderFactory dot, give me the value right now. Let's stick our breakpoint there instead of here. Just switch my wireless on. Let's press F5. And so now we're doing lazy instantiation. There's the first guy being created because we have a creation, a constructor that requires an instance. But then we run on. And only when we click our search button here, you'll notice, has this guy already been created? No. Okay, well, create him for me now. There you go. There he is being created. So we can lazily instantiate these things. Does that make sense? Yeah. And the other thing I'd say is, what if I wanted to create more than one of these things? So if we take a look at what we've got our album info provider here who is importing one of this piece of functionality. And lazily at runtime, you will end up with one instance of this. What if you needed functionality where you were needing to create many instances of this? What if you were importing a dynamic view for the UI? And every time the user clicks a button, you want to create that dynamic view again and again and again. But you still want to use imports and exports. How do you do that? How do you magically create something when you don't even know where it's coming from in the first place? You've no constructor to call here. You don't know where the export is coming from. Well, we've got a way of doing that. What we could do is say, for instance, let's go over here. And let's say what we want to do is instead of doing it this way, we'll say instead of it lazy, let's use a thing called an export factory. And if we have an export factory here, what that does is it knows how to create new instances of the imported functionality. So what we could do is, instead of doing this work here, we could say, let's say, for instance, for int equals 1 to 10, let's say this.artprovider. Create me an instance of that export and then get the value from it. Let's just say var v equals. And again, if we set our breakpoint here, what we'll see is the first instance being created for us. So down here, what we're seeing is essentially there's our first instance for the importing constructor. But then when we hit our breakpoint, you can see we're going through and we're using that factory now to create another instance. There we go. And another instance. There we go. So notice how we can dynamically create an instance of something that we know nothing about. All we know is the exports and the imports. That's all we know. We just create that stuff that way. Let me go and just focus on exports for a minute. Let me get rid of this guy, and let's just say that we go back to just doing a plain old import up here. At the moment, what MEF is doing is it's going over to, say, our art provider, and it is seeing that this is exported as an interface, and so MEF magically creates instances of this class for us. But we could also have a factory that created the instances of the class if we wanted to do that as well. So we can do more stuff around exporting. So I'll tell you what, let's just go over to my little factory class here, which is empty right now, and let's put a field onto this thing. Let's say I want to export as a type of, actually we can just leave it like that, let's leave it as export. Let's say public iArtProvider export field, something like that. And let me just throw into the constructor here that will say this.artProvider export field equals a new album art provider. So what we've got now is a class with a field on it which is exported. And effectively what we've just said to MEF is, you have liberty to create an instance of this type and grab that field from it as an export. That's a perfectly fine thing for MEF to do. Now when we do this, you'll notice what happens is, our application spins up and MEF says no. The reason why MEF says no at this point, if you notice, is that there are no two places in my code base exporting this functionality. We've got an export here which is exporting this functionality, and we've got this guy here which is also exporting the same functionality. So MEF sees two exports of the same thing and one import, and the import is saying it requires exactly one of these things. It's implicit in the contract we've got right now. So MEF says, okay, I see two components offering your functionality. I see one import saying it wants one import and one instance. I don't know which of these two things you want, therefore I won't guess. I was guessing is normally a bad idea in software. So it doesn't guess, it just says, I can't help you at the moment, it's too complicated, you figure it out. So what we could say is, well, okay, we'll figure it out. The one over here, for instance, let's say that this is an export called foo. Okay? That would solve the problem. But if we go back over to our info provider, we'd need to say, well, this guy here is importing foo. And if we build that up, then that's a little bit of extra metadata we've just added to the contract, and now both of those things will compile, sorry, will run the way that they should, and everything's back to how it was before, everything's fine. So we can have that kind of thing. We can also export in the same way over here on this factory. It didn't have to be a field here called foo, it could be a property called foo, so we could go and say property, iAlbum, art provider, property, and then we could have just set that to be a property. We could build that up, and it will work the same way as well. You know, so we can export from fields, we can export from properties. If we wanted to be more advanced, we can actually export functions out of here and import them onto delegates, which gets a little bit more funky, but you can do that too if you want to do that. But really, this is just around providing a factory, and this allows you to export things into MEF where there is no class to construct in order to do the export. So if you've got singletons, this allows you to export those singletons into MEF. Yes, go on, quick question. Oh, so how does MEF know about this factory at all? So all MEF is seeing, and we will come back to this notion of discoverability, but all MEF is seeing at the moment is there is an export here on this particular type. The type is public, and the property is public. So if you think of using, say, reflection in this instance, MEF can find that export. And you're right, we haven't had to export the factory. We've just exported its field or its property, and MEF will find that. And then it will feel that it has liberty to create instances of that factory and reach for that property. In accordance with the creation policy that was specified here at the top. So this would actually be a singleton. If you're worried about discoverability, that is where we're heading. I've not explained anything about discoverability yet, but it's the natural next question. Okay, so we managed to do a couple of exports of things. Let me just show you a little bit more about importing. Let me just finish that off. Hidden in my project here, we've actually got some additional providers. So here we have a premium provider, which is another album art provider. It's the fancy album art provider. It doesn't work. And we have the super album art provider, which does not work any better. And you'll notice that we have not encountered these things so far because they have names on them, so they haven't been showing up in our imports. But what if I actually wanted to import both of these things? They're both premium providers. Well, I can go back to my info provider over here, and I can say what I want to do is I want to import many things which are called premium provider. And then I can say, let's write a property here. I can go for an enumerable, I could go for a list, I could go for a collection, but let's go for an enumerable of iAlbum art provider. Let's call that premium providers. So I can get that. And if we go down to our little line of code here, just to set a breakpoint on that and show how that's getting populated, let's just go and search. So you should be able to see we've got our premium providers, and in there we see a fancy provider and we see a super album art provider. So those things are just being instantiated. We can also do that in a lazy manner as well. So let's go and be enumerable of lazy of iAlbum art provider. And if we do that in a lazy manner, then what we could do down here is we could say, okay, let's just go through each of those things. Let's say item in this dot, were they called premium providers? Then we can say if not item dot is value created, then we could say, okay, var value equals item dot, get me that value. And when we arrive on that line of code in the first instance and we just run down to that thing, let's just let that breakpoint go. You'll see when we hit that in the first instance, if you look at our premium providers, because they're lazy now, neither of these things has yet been created. So we've got a lazy list of things that we can create on demand. And as we navigate through this, we'll see, no, it's not been created, therefore create it. And if we take a look at that list at this point, you'll see that the first guy in the list, Come here. Got you. The first guy in the list now has been created. The second guy in the list is now still waiting for creation. So we can import many things. We can import different spell checkers, different calculation engines, so on and so forth. That's all fine. The other thing that we could do is that I said that we can also decorate things with additional metadata. So we had those super providers over here, these guys. What I could do is if I wanted to further differentiate, I could say export my flag. Let's say is expensive. True. And this would add additional metadata to the export such that the import could pick up that metadata and make a dynamic filtering decision. Do I want the expensive version or do I want the cheap version? Well, we know that neither one of them works, so you might as well go for the cheap version. But this isn't actually the way that I would recommend you do this. What you can do is you can take that export attribute in MEF and you can derive your own custom export attributes from it to give you strong typing. So let me show you how that looks. Again, in my project, let's get rid of this. In my project over here, I've actually got a custom attribute. It's a bit lengthy. It's a custom attribute that derives from MEF's export attribute. It labels itself as a metadata attribute. And all it does is it sets the name to be paid provider, so the contract name is always going to be paid provider, essentially. And it adds a little property here called cost, and cost is just an enum that's either low or high. So what that means, I can then go and export things using this custom attribute. So over here, I've got some paid providers. It's the cheap provider and the expensive provider. Neither of them work. But you can see that on the cheap provider, we've set the cost to be low, and on the expensive provider, we've set the cost to be high. I've also gone and defined an interface that will let me interrogate that metadata. Now, this is a bit of a trick in MEF. If you take a look at this interface, you will notice it just has one public property and it called cost of the right type. You will never implement this interface. MEF dynamically creates an implementation of this interface for you. So let's now look at how we would do this import. If I go back over to my importing code over here, which I've lost for a moment. So here's my importing code over here. Now I want to import my paid providers. So that's those two that I just showed you with the custom metadata on them. But when we bring them in, I don't just want the functionality here. I also want to be able to interrogate the metadata. So I want I export album metadata, which is the interface I just showed you. Let's call these paid providers. Excuse me. So these are paid providers. Notice now I've got the interface and the metadata. So if I go down to the code here, what I could say is, let's take a look at these and let's say if item dot, oh, it's called paid providers. Excuse me. If item dot metadata dot cost equals low, then I want that particular component. So I'm bringing in exports with extra metadata on there and differentiating from them before we create them. We don't create them if we don't like the look of them. So then I could say var value equals item dot, not metadata, value dot, actually just that, that's fine. We could create that thing that way. So if you notice as we run that code, click our button, let's just let this thing spin up. Click our button over here. Here's our paid providers. They come in as lazy. You can see neither one is created. We take a look at the first one. We have a look at its item cost on its metadata. It's low. So we say, great, we'll have that one. And then the next one comes along. We have a look at its item cost. It says high. So we say, no, we're not interested in that one. So you see how we can dynamically filter these exports that are coming in, magically max that stuff up? Okay, cool. Let me shut that guy down. Okay, so we did a bit of a sort of fest, really, around how do imports get matched to exports. You also learned that we can import with default values. You also learned that we can import many things if you want to do that as well. Let's move along a little bit. This is really just a piece of terminology. In MEF, parts have part definitions. And a part definition I see in my head is just a blueprint for a part. And in many ways, I see it a bit like type and object in .NET. You know, in .NET, every object has a type. You can walk up to the type and say, make me one of those objects. In MEF, parts have a blueprint. And you can walk up to the blueprint and you can say, make me one of those parts. The only way that the analogy falls down is that in MEF, it's possible to have a part that doesn't have a definition. But this is really just terminology because I'm using it on the following slide. And this was coming back to the gentleman's question that we haven't even touched upon yet, which is, how does MEF find all these imports and exports? How does it figure this stuff out? Well, the way it works is that MEF is using a class called a composition container. We haven't seen that yet, and that's quite deliberate. But it uses a thing called a composition container. And that composition container is what we hand the components to in order to do the composition magic. That composition container can point to a whole bunch of catalogs of components. As you can see here, I've got a red catalog that then has two more catalogs within it. And each of these catalogs contains definitions of parts. So the way that this stuff works is that if we walk up to MEF saying, compose me one of those orange objects, which in our case is like composing the main page in our application, then MEF can say, oh yeah, okay, that's that orange object. I know that it needs some import satisfying. I will root through the catalogs that I can see, and I will see if in those catalogs there are any parts described that seem to match what you are looking for. If there are, I will instantiate them and plug you all together. So MEF searches catalogs in order to find parts. Does it make sense? Okay. Or, optionally, you might already have the objects created. So in this particular simple case, I've got the orange component and the blue component. The orange component says, I import foo. The blue component says, well, I export foo. And if we were to hand those two components to MEF and say, compose them, MEF will say, well, that's pretty simple. He's looking for something. You've got it. There you go. Look at that. This is not too complicated a trick. And we can mix and match these two approaches. Sometimes we've already got components created and we're just stitching them together. Sometimes MEF has to search its catalogs to see if it can find the sort of component you're looking for. Okay, so let's go back to our demo, and pretty much we're in the same sort of solution. Nothing really has radically changed, so all we're doing again, I think I refactored it slightly just so that we go back to importing based on interfaces. So we have our main page, which is importing the info provider, and then we have our info provider, which is importing the art provider. And in the main page, we just call composition initializer satisfy imports of this. And we know that that should kind of hang together, so if you just make sure it works. Just go do that, search, it's working nicely. So let me just go to a piece of code that runs before this. So I'm just going to go to a piece of code that I've put over here in this separate file. It will run before that. And let's go ahead and create formmef a composition container. Okay? And then let's walk up to mef and say composition host dot initialize container. Okay? It looks very innocuous. We run it up, and all hell breaks loose in the application. It's all right. It was expected. And so what we just did was we created an empty container that has no catalogs in it. And then we said to mef, this is your default container. And mef said, okay, that's great. That's the default container. So then when we called composition initializer satisfy imports, it searched through an empty list of catalogs. It found nothing to produce. And so it can no longer satisfy our imports. And if you remember, our imports are not optional. Therefore, mef has a problem. Well, actually, it doesn't have a problem. You have a problem because it just throws an exception. So that's really what's going on there. So we can start to address this problem by playing with catalogs. There's three catalogs I'll show you here. They're very, very simple to understand. Here's the easiest. Anyone's going to get this straight away. We can create a type catalog. Type catalog. And into that type catalog, you can pass any number of types. Okay, we can then feed that catalog to the container. Our application, if I type those things correctly, should be back and working. Is it fairly obvious how mef finds those types in that catalog? Hang on. I just need to check if you're still alive. It is dark in here. Is it fairly obvious how mef finds those types in that catalog? Thank you. Otherwise, we have to spend an hour on it, and I don't know what I would say. What is there to say? We told him about them. What more can you do? So that's pretty simple to understand. We also have another kind of catalog that is called the assembly catalog. So let's take a quick look at that. Actually, no. Let's take a look at the aggregate catalog first. So let me make an aggregate catalog. This is another catalog. We can make one of those. The aggregate catalog is just a collection of catalogs. So it's pretty simple to understand. And so what I could do is make this into, let's make this into catalog one and just put one type in it. Let's make another one, catalog two, and put another type in it. And then what we could do is walk up to the, sorry, too many semicolons. Then what we could do is walk up to the aggregate catalog and either add the catalogs here and now, catalog one, catalog two, or we could just add catalog one, for instance, catalog one. And then we could walk back to the catalog and say catalogs.add another catalog, catalog 2. And finally, if we give that aggregate catalog to the container, it will do the right thing. I made a particular point of that there. If we walk up to, say, a type catalog, one of the things you will find is that having created it, you cannot change it. There's no way to add additional types. It's fixed. But what you can do with the aggregate catalog is you can always add more catalogs. Okay. So what we've done now is we created an aggregate catalog with two type catalogs, but it's still the same answer every time we press the button. Okay. I point out the aggregate catalog because this starts to point towards the idea that, you know, that method there where we call catalogs.add, bear in mind that could happen any time during the lifetime of your application. It doesn't have to happen at startup, which is what we're doing right now. We'll move it later on and make it happen somewhere else. So let's move along a little bit. The other catalog, just to be quick here, is the assembly catalog. That's kind of easy to understand. So what we could do is we could create an assembly catalog, a new one of those, and let's just say assembly.getExecutingAssembly. And let's just put that into our container. And if we press F5 on that, that should work just fine as well. So what that's basically saying, and this comes back to your question earlier on, that says, reflect all over the current assembly and find all the exports you can find. Just go for it. Find whatever you can find. And that's how it found that thing that you saw earlier on. So the gentleman asks, is that the default? And the answer is almost. Almost. Nearly. And you're very good at it. I could pay you for this. You're prompting me to go along. That's exactly where we're going next. I've not got many euros, I'm afraid. So the thing is, so if you don't do this stuff here, bear in mind you have no real need to do this. I can comment this out, and the application was working before we started, because we called composition initializer satisfy imports on this. And basically what this call says is, the first thing it does is it checks to see, basically, have you set up a default container? If you have not, we will set one up for you. And the way in which we do that, more or less, coming back to the gentleman's question back over here, is I just wrote a version of it here, part initializer replica, let's call that. That's this function here. So what we do by default, more or less, is we create an aggregate catalog. We reach through all the assemblies that are deployed with your Silverlight application. We find them. We load them. We create an assembly catalog for that assembly, and we add it into the catalogs that we've got. So that's kind of what we do by default if you don't do anything. And normally that's good enough, but not always. And we'll talk about that maybe as we go along. All making sense? Oh, so the gentleman's question over here is, can you configure the catalogs using the configuration file? There's nothing in MEF that gives you that automatically, but it is a very easy thing to do. You'll find examples of doing that on my own website. So it's not in there in the framework, but it's pretty easy to do. And we'll see some more catalogs coming yet, so there's more to come in terms of catalogs. And the gentleman's other question is, can you remove catalogs that have already been registered in the container? And there's a question around that, which it kind of depends. And we'll see why it depends as we go along. There's more to come on that front. Okay, so let's save this stuff and pop back over here. Okay, so we saw almost all the built-in catalogs there. There's one more to come yet. Things can change, you know, stuff happens, and imagine that what we've got here is this scenario on the screen where we've got a container with a couple of catalogs, and there's that part over there, and maybe the part has been composed, and we said, yes, in order to function happily, you will need two of these purple things. That's how that part has been composed. Now imagine somebody comes along and either adds a part to an existing catalog or adds a catalog to an aggregate catalog, thereby creating more parts. And the question is, what should we do about the guy up there in orange who's already been composed? So you came along saying, is there a spell checker? And we said, no. And then later on, somebody comes along and adds a spell checker. And we kind of say, well, you know, maybe that was relevant to you. Maybe you wanted one to show up. Maybe you didn't. I don't know. So as new parts are introduced to the container, an import has the option to say, I would like to recompose. I would like to be notified as new parts come into the container. I'd like to get recomposed. And that's this notion of recomposability. Recomposability is kind of key for Silverlight. If you imagine you were building that mythical word processor in Silverlight, you would probably want the initial download of your Zap to be small and compact in order that it gets on the user's screen pretty quickly. That's what you want to do with a Silverlight application. So imagine that what you do is you download the bare bones of the word processor that says, I can run without a spell checker, but I'd really like one. So I'll import a spell checker, and maybe in the future one will show up. The idea is that at some later point, you can come and download an extra little piece of functionality that says, hey, I'm a spell checker. I just showed up. You could get recomposed, and all of a sudden, magically, you now have a spell checker that you didn't have when the application first started. So it's very, very key for Silverlight. Silverlight applications I see as lots of Zap files or potentially across a network that then just get downloaded on demand as you need them. So let's go and take a look at that. This brings in another catalog called the deployment catalog. So let's just go and take a look at that thing. You switch back over here. Okay, so similar example again, except I think things have changed a little bit, so I need to talk you through just the structure of this example, so it's changed slightly. Up until now, everything has been in one beautiful assembly in one beautiful Zap, but that's not very real world. And also, it made things very easy because I could just use the standard behavior and everything would just be magically discovered. What I've done here is move my stuff into different projects. So I've got my main MEF application here. That's my main application. And of course, just like it was doing before, it still goes ahead. Where is it? Oh, maybe that is the right file. So it still goes ahead and it imports an iAlbumInfo provider, just like it always did. But notice that it's made two choices. It allows a default. We never allowed a default before. And we also allow recomposition. So the way this is going to spark up is that when we first run the application, there will not be an iAlbum info provider. It will not exist when the application first spins up. So we need to allow default. Otherwise, as you know, the application will blow up. Also, we allow composition because we're going to download that component over time and add it to catalogs. So we allow recomposition on this thing as well. Let me just show you that. So here's our album info provider. What I've then done is moved my interfaces out into a separate project. So in this project, all there is the info provider and the art provider. Those interfaces are now just in a separate project so that everybody can reference them. I've then taken my album info provider and put him into a separate project. Of course, he needs to reference the interface library. He also references MEF. And in that info provider now, we just have this one class that exports himself like he's been doing all along. And he also imports. And in this particular case, he also allows recomposition on this guy. Okay, so he allows recomposition there as well. That guy is now in a separate project up here, and he's just there as he was before, exporting himself just like he was before. So what these things actually build out into on the website is three separate zaps. The main zap, and then we've got the album info zap, and the album art zap. So we've now got three zaps that make up the application. I don't know if I've got my breakpoint switched on or not here, but let's just press F5 and see what happens. Okay, so what we're doing is initially the application will run up. And you notice I'm working with an aggregate catalog, so that's something I needed to do because I'm going to add to things over time. So what we do is we create an aggregate catalog. And then for each of these hard-coded URIs here, we create an instance of a new catalog I've not shown you yet called the deployment catalog, whose job is to download zaps. That's what he does. So we create the deployment catalog and we give him the URI. So I can't hover that. We've not got to that line of code yet. We give him the URI. We add the deployment catalog into the aggregate catalog. And then we tell it to go and download. We could do it in either order. It doesn't matter. But basically, we're creating two new deployment catalogs, pushing them into our aggregate catalog, and telling them to download whenever they feel like it. And they will download themselves whenever they feel like it. We just create a composition container and initialize with that particular container. So let's press F5. Then, of course, we call composition initializer satisfy imports. And let me just show you. You can actually implement an interface. It's possibly the longest interface in .NET. It's called iPartImportSatisfiedNotification. If you want to be notified as MEF is doing composition, this interface will allow you to be notified. MEF will say, hey, I just recomposed you. Perhaps you're interested in that. Perhaps you're not. You don't have to implement it if you don't want to. And so what we do here is I actually implement it so I can show you as MEF is recomposing things. So let's press F5. And MEF is doing a composition. And initially, we have no album info provider. And MEF is doing a composition. And now we have an album info provider, and it's set. You can see in there it's got an art provider as well. Let me show you that without the breakpoints. We can search, of course, as well. But let me just show you that without the breakpoints a second. I don't know if this is really visible here, but let me just... You should see that as the applicant spins up, it has a little busy window. Yeah. It's too quick. But it has a little busy window while it's actually loading those components. Until they arrive, it won't let you do a search because it can't do the search. You might spot somewhere in there that we've got a busy flag and a busy flag when that thing finally arrives. I use a busy indicator from the Silverlight toolkit for that. So hopefully you see how we are now being able to download these things. And what we've done in that example is we've gone from everything being in one DLL, now things are partitioned out. But from a MEF perspective, it still imports, exports, and catalogs. It still works kind of the way it did before. Okay. Let me come back to, I think, what the gentleman's question was over there in some ways. As we're doing this work, we have a notion of stable composition. And I'll try and show you this in a minute. Imagine that we've got the orange part that you've got on the screen here, and the orange part says, I need one of these blue things. I need one of these blue things. And the blue part is saying, well, I need something that's missing. So we've got this chain of dependencies where the orange component wants the blue component, and the blue component wants something that doesn't exist. From a MEF's perspective, effectively, none of those components exist. So what MEF will say is, I will not import half of a hierarchy, I will only import a whole hierarchy that's actually complete. So it doesn't leave you in a situation here where if you're the author of that orange component at the top, you have to somehow know about the blue component in the middle and whether its import was satisfied or not. You don't have to ask that question, because if things have been composed correctly, then the whole tree has been composed, not half of the tree. Does that make sense? Okay. The other side of stable composition is kind of coming back, I think, to the gentleman's question over here. What if you have a part like this one here that requires exactly one of these blue things? So this guy here, the orange part, requires exactly one of these blue things. And somebody walks up to the container with a new part that matches the same contract. But we've already composed this guy up here with the blue part. So if we were to allow that into the container, his view of the world at the time that he was composed was kind of broken. So somebody comes along and I've been composed and I've been told there is only one spell checker out there. And then somebody else comes along and adds another spell checker into the container. Now, if I wasn't expecting two spell checkers in my application, that might be a problem for me. And so what MEF will do based upon the contracts here is it will say, no, wait a minute, you don't get to add that at this point because there's a guy over there that you are going to break by adding this into the container. And so we have this notion of we don't give people a set of parts that have not properly been constructed, and giving people a set of parts that have been properly constructed, we don't break them once they've been constructed. Does that make sense? I've got an example of this in the demo. I don't know how well or badly this will work for you. It's by far the most complex thing I'll show you here. So if you get this instantly, you're far smarter than me, because I didn't get it the first time I saw it. So let's see what we're doing. In this solution, secretly, we have a super album art provider hidden away in this zap. And if you notice, the super album art provider is an art provider, but it is importing a missing string. No one anywhere is exporting that string. Consequently, to MEF, this component is non-viable. MEF sees this component and says, well, you would make a really good iAlbum art provider if you didn't have that missing string, which I can't fulfill for you, so you're dead. I'm not interested in you. You don't exist. It really does kind of shun it. It doesn't talk to it. It's not interested. So that's kind of fun. So what we could do is back on the UI over here, you'll notice that there's an extra magic button down here. And this button down here, what it does is if we ran that button, there's just an extra little class down here. Let's just find this guy. String factory. String factory exports the missing string. Exciting, isn't it? I know you can barely wait. So at the point where we click on the button at the bottom of the screen over here, let's just go and click and see what that does. What we do is we create a type catalog for that string factory, and we add it to our aggregate catalog. So now we're saying, you know that album art provider you've got over there that was broken before? Here's his missing export. He's now viable. And MEF says, let's go back. MEF says no. One thing about MEF is it has fantastic exception messages. By far the best exception messages I've ever seen, really, in the .NET framework. What MEF is saying here is about stable composition. We had an export of an album art provider which had a missing string. We provided the missing string. That export became viable. But then MEF said, but hang on a minute, there's a guy over there who I've already told there is only one album art provider. If I add you, there will be two and he will be broken. I will not break him, I'll break you. Well, you know, you came late. What do you expect? Does that make sense? You're all incredibly smart people. Took me 3 weeks to get that. 3 weeks. It took me 2 weeks just to read the exception. You get the idea. And that's by far the most complex thing I've shown you here. And it's to me, it's a particularly smart aspect of MEF. It's trying to make sure that you have these big component hierarchies that don't break as you do this work. So that's kind of the thing on that. Okay, so let's pop back out of that guy. I think we've seen that. So one other topic that I wanted to bring in here was around the idea of using MEF in model view, view model implementations. Is model view, view model, I guess you're hearing it around this conference. It's something you're semi-familiar with at least. More than semi, wow, yeah, very familiar with, okay, great. So model view, view model is a pattern a lot of people are using to build WPF and Silverlight applications, primarily because it has impact on designability of the view, testability of the view model, and maintainability of the whole code base. And if you've not really looked at this, it's powered by things really within Silverlight, such that the binding in Silverlight is so powerful you can do things like this, where really you just have a declarative view. Some people argue about whether that should be XAML only or whether you can have a bit of code in there. I'm not religious on these things, but you have a largely declarative view. And you have a view model that provides the data to that view and the functionality to that view. And the idea is that those two things are purely bound together. The view doesn't know about the view model doesn't know about the view. They only talk through data binding. And that's kind of the thing really from a Silverlight perspective. You can do this with various frameworks. There's lots of different approaches to doing MVVM. And there's also lots of different ways of separating out models and views and so on. I just wanted to try and show you a simple example of doing this with MEF. So let's pop back over and take a quick look at that. Back over here. And this is a different example. I couldn't manage to shoehorn this into the albums and arts and all that kind of stuff. So it's just a kind of different example. Let me show you what it does before we step into it a little bit. And it is very, very simple. I didn't mean to shock you with the simplicity of it. Actually, that's the complex view. The simple views are these two here. So what we've got on the screen is three little tabs in a tab control. We have view three, which is the time. Is that the time? We have view two, which is the date. And we have view one, which is kind of a stopwatch with a start and stop on it over here. That's kind of it. Those are the views. Very simple. Let me show you, though, how those are put together from a MEF perspective, how we've structured this stuff. So if you look at the project, what we've got, let me just collapse this down a little bit, is I've got my main page over here. And if we take a look at our main page, then you'll notice on the main page is a tab control bound to a bunch of views. Tab control, so that's just bound to a bunch of views. There is a slight little bit of code behind going on here, and let me show you how that's happening. If we go into our code behind for that main page, here's my main page, and you'll notice that my main page is importing an observable collection of iView that it calls views. So I'm a tab control, and I'm prepared to display any number of views. I just import them. I have no idea where they come from. By the way, my iView interface here is just a marker interface. If we look at that interface, there is no functionality on it. It's just a marker. I've just used it as a marker. So I am importing a collection of views. Now, the tab control in Silverlight is a bit weird. If I'd had my way, this would have been entirely data-bound, but the tab control's a bit odd. And what you have to give it is actual tab items. So I had to take that collection of views that we have here and turn them into tab items. And that's why I have this extra property, just to work with the tab control, which is a bit weird. Oh, it certainly seemed to be when I was trying to work with it. So we have that there. Otherwise, we would just have this one property here called views, which is import many. So if we go off into our views folder over here, you'll see that, for instance, let's take our date view. Look at the XAML for that. Well, the XAML is just a simple data binding. And if we look at the code behind it, you'll see that our date view, in my case, implements iView, exports itself as an iView. It uses a non-shared creation policy. I think this makes sense because, you know, if I was to create 7 of these views in the UI, I expect to get 7 objects. I don't expect to get one that's shared between all of them. That would be really weird. Typing on one screen would show up on another, and that's not usually what you want. So we use non-shared here for this view. And so we export this as a view, so that's why it shows up in the tab. And then what I do is I import a little property called viewModel with a name, and I set that as the data context. So notice what we're doing. We're exporting a view. We're importing a viewModel. It's very simple. There's other ways that you could do this. If we go and find that particular viewModel, let's go over here and find viewModels. Which one are we looking for? The date. And by the way, these are just hard-coded strings. If I put them into constants, that might be a better idea. But over here, what we've got is the viewModel. It simply exports itself as that view model name I just showed you with a type of object. You can export as object if you want to. And this particular view model, again, is non-shared, because I kind of expect that every time you create a view model will go with it. You create another view, you get another view model. That's kind of the expectation here. That's kind of how that works. And you'll notice that this particular view model also goes and imports a simple model, iTime model. And if we look over there, let's go and look at that model. We've got the time model, which is an iTime model. It exports itself as an iTime model. And actually, it makes sure that it is shared across all people using it. So it just says, I'm okay to be shared. So what we have ultimately here is the time model being shared across multiple view models and sitting on top of those, a view for each one of those view models. And notice that we didn't explicitly create anything. All we did was start at the top and say, import a bunch of views. And those views said, well, each one of us imports a view model. So those got created, and each view model said, well, I import a model, and that got created. And MEF did the work for us. Now, as you've seen, you would know by now that it's not difficult to walk up to MEF and change its composition container such that instead of using these real classes, we can start to mock these classes and do things for testability. So we could change the container and say, no, don't create one of those to satisfy that interface. Create one of these to satisfy that interface. We can do that stuff very easily. We just reconfigure the container. Does that all make sense as to how that fits together? Okay, cool. Let's pop back over there. So just a couple of pointers, really, to some slightly more advanced topics, I guess. One would be around the idea of extending MEF in a couple of different ways, I guess, really. So what I've showed you so far today, I think everything we talked about was with catalogs. And I'll explain to you now that I have been lying to you throughout the session, but it was for good reasons, mostly. Generally speaking, MEF doesn't actually know a thing about catalogs. MEF only knows about some things called export providers. And so if you want to extend MEF, you can do a couple of things. One is you can implement your own catalogs. So you can write your own catalogs that do whatever you do to go and find the components that you want to compose into a MEF environment. Or actually, if you don't need all the functionality of a catalog, you can also implement a thing called an export provider, which is easier to implement. And if you've already got other sort of frameworks that are managing sets of components, and I'm thinking of things like inversion of control containers like Unity and those kinds of things, you can very easily plug them into MEF by just implementing an export provider that grabs components from that container. So you don't have to use MEF on its own, you can use it with other things as well. And in fact, there are examples on the web already of integrating MEF with things like Unity and other IOC containers, if you're doing that kind of stuff. The other thing that I've given you probably the illusion or the impression of as we've gone along today is that everything in MEF is to do with attributes. So as we've gone along, I've been putting attributes onto my exports, I've been putting attributes onto my imports, I've been putting attributes to coordinate the creation policy, whether it's shared or whether it's not shared, and so on. And in MEF, that's a thing that's called a programming model. They call that the programming model. And the default programming model is about attributes. But actually, that's pluggable in MEF as well. So it's perfectly possible to write code that you can go and write without any attributes whatsoever, and you have to create a programming model that describes your components in terms of imports and exports without using attributes. I started one on my website that's kind of XAML-based, so instead of having to write any attributes on any code, what you do is write some descriptions about the code in some XAML to say, hey, there's a component called Fred, and Fred exports this functionality and imports that functionality. And you just define that in a XAML file and then feed that through to MEF. So this is more advanced. By default, you would use the attribute model, but if you want to do sort of POCO kind of scenarios where you've just got plain CLR objects that you don't want to decorate with attributes, you can replace the programming model and do that yourself. So there's a whole bunch of stuff you would implement to do that, most of the classes you see on the screen, but you can replace that. So if you're going away with the idea, oh, it's all about attributes, I hate attributes, I don't want to put attributes on my code, then you can still use MEF without those attributes. You just need to do a little bit of work to take that away. If you want resources on MEF, I made some screencasts on Channel 9. It's probably about a 5 or 6 hour version of this talk in some ways. So if you want a longer version of this talk, this was not long enough for you, then feel free to go to, you can watch them at fast pace though. I can't do fast pace in real life. You can go to Channel 9, tags learn MEF SL4, You should be able to find those things up there. If you can't find them that way, you can search for me on Channel 9. I've got a sort of distinctive surname. You should be able to find me up there. If you want to subscribe to blogs on MEF, then the very, very best blog out there is Glenn Block. He is the guy that leads MEF up in the States. And he's at blogs.msdn/gblock. If you want to inspect that MEF source code on Codeplex, go to mef.codeplex.com. And generally speaking, actually, I want to just put another word on that before we do that. We'll do it on the Microsoft slide. I would just ask to finish up, and obviously I hope you've enjoyed the 2 days you've been here and had a great time and so on. I hope you've enjoyed this session and found it useful and you've got an overview of MEF. What I would ask you for, as a personal favor, is if you do get requests for feedback for the session, I would ask that you feedback. So I'm not asking that you feedback positively, although that would be very nice. I'm definitely not asking you feedback negatively, although I can handle that just about. Obviously, I will probably cry. But you won't be able to see me, so it'll be okay. But that's not what I'm asking for. What I'm asking for is that you feedback either way. It's very, very valuable to us as speakers here to get feedback. And so what I'm trying to do at the conference is, well, obviously I'd like to get the best feedback, that's one thing. What I want to get is the most feedback. Okay, so if you've been to the session and you get the chance to feedback, then please do feedback. Other than that, thanks a lot for coming along. And safe journeys home if you're going home today. And I'll hang around, get my stuff off the stage. If people want to chat, I'll hang around and have a chat. Thanks a lot for coming.